We're on?
We're on.
Okay, great. Thank you, Sorrel. I'm going to bring this meeting to order of the University of Albany Council. Welcome, everybody. Happy New Year.
New Year.
We're not going to wait on George. We're going to go through the agenda without George and put the president's report back till later, till he shows up. The university is making a request for 2 grants to the Hearst Foundation. And as Michael was saying, they got here a little late, and it's for some significant dollars. And as we all know, dollars come before our business. So George will join us as soon as he can. I do want to welcome today Vincent Porfirio, who is a guest here. He's the assistant dean of students at Sage College, and you're doing some work on university governance. Is that right? Welcome. And you can learn a little bit, or maybe even, you know, give us a few pointers afterwards. Hey, Susan, how are you?
Good, how are you?
So I think if we're going to, a couple things that hopefully everybody got their packets. You know, one thing that's in there that we'll get to later is a resolution regarding rational tuition, and Pierre is going to speak to that around what's been going on with ACT and some of the things going on at the SUNY Central System level that George will address as well. I just want to make you aware of that. That was a late addition as a resolution. We'll be explaining the context for that later today, but if you have a second to peruse it in your packets, it's there as well. I guess the first thing is everybody has the minutes. Any comments on the minutes? If not, I'd like a motion to adopt the minutes.
I'll make the motion.
Second. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Great. I think just keeping the order and moving past George, just go to the reports and updates from the student representatives. And I know on this agenda they're kind of staggered, but maybe the easiest thing to do is just have Stephen and Nick just address that.
It looks like Steve may not be here after.
Oh, he's not going to be able to join us?
Good question.
Okay.
Because of the weekend, I mean, he may not. Thought he was going to show.
Going home for the holiday?
Possibly.
All right. I don't blame him.
Wow.
A lot of cabs out there.
Sure.
Thank you very much, Rob.
Sure.
So, okay, well, let's go to updates then and start with Susanna.
I have a couple things I wanted to mention, sort of partly from the faculty standpoint, but more from the Senate standpoint. As I'm sure will come up later in the conversation, partly maybe through the provost, George has convened another budget advisory group, which we've resisted calling Bag 4, but is now called Bag 4. We tried to find something else, but that's what it is. This group was duly constituted in consultation with the Governance Council and met for the first time last week on Friday. 10 minutes before I walked over here, I forwarded the first written report from that bag from the chair, Jim Fawcett, who's the chair of UPBC, onto the Senate and the Senate Executive Committee as requested by those two bodies. From a faculty standpoint, although I'm one voice, I'll say that I think everybody on campus, faculty and administration alike, we're all sort of holding our breath, waiting for that other shoe to drop from the governor's office, from the legislature. People are understandably a little bit nervous about what lies in the future, but there's little that we can do except wait and try and make some rational plans. The last thing I wanted to mention was a bill that came through the Senate this past week to adopt the, for lack of a better term, the bare minimum of general education requirements from SUNY Central on this campus in lieu of immediately adapting a recommendation by the Gen Ed Task Force set up by the Senate. That bill was defeated in the Senate, and there seemed to be a strong concern on the part of the faculty that we on this campus retain a unique identity, and that's partly expressed through general education. So instead of simply going with what the bare minimum would be, to put our stamp as UAlbany on our general education requirements. So in essence, we can be proud of who we are and what the students can do when they graduate from this place. So now we're back revisiting the task force recommendation, which may or may not be put in place in the next semester. We'll see.
Was that a unanimous vote?
You mean against the bill?
Mm-hmm.
No, it was not unanimous. I don't know the percentages. My guess, and maybe Nick would know off the top of his head, it was did you have the numbers? About 25% in support?
13 to 35,
I'm sorry. Could you just, quick synopsis of what that, so the SUNY Central, I don't know, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I'll go back. Last January,
right.
SUNY Central contacted all the campuses and said that they had changed what the bare minimum of general education requirements were on all the campuses.
They had knocked it down.
And they had knocked it down.
Okay.
I won't get into the details about it, but they had
right.
reduced it.
Right.
In essence, right. And then each campus was responsible for deciding how they wanted to implement that. It's a little bit like sort of federal and state
right.
law,
understood.
In that, the federal law was the bare minimum, and then each right. campus had to decide what they wanted to do.
Great, thank you.
Sure.
I thought that's what it was, but I wanted to make sure I understood.
Let's hear up a student. Okay. Well, Suzanne's going
to. But we are to be applauded.
Suzanne.
Which
that's
is what I thought.
Like a student, so.
But she still does look like a student.
I know. We're a student. I thought Suzanne looks like a student.
<That's good. George. laughs>
Okay. Thank you, Susanna. Nick?
Sure. In lieu of Stephen, I'll give you a quick outline of what GSO has been up to. Nothing big like bringing Bill Clinton to campus, but we continue to go along with our smaller budget in terms of awarding grants to graduate students for research and for travel to conferences, different activities, both social and educational throughout the semester. And we're trying to work with our limited office space in the campus center. We have a high demand for using our printer services, so we're looking into acquiring more printers and things of that nature.
Okay. Brevity is
sure.
always appreciated. Okay, Bill?
Thank you, Dan. I'm going to pass around a copy of our last annual report, so I'll pass around to the other side of the table. I just figured I'd get on a couple of the highlights to let you know a lot of the great activities we're doing at the Alumni Association. Since it's a brief statement, I promise I'll keep it brief. George, give me the word.
No, I give you a look.
I Well, some of you may not know, the Alumni Association has been around quite some time. In its current iteration, we were granted our charter in 1964, and we became a 501c3 in 1967. We were responsible for the first annual phone-a-thon to raise funds for the university in 1973. In our lovely alumni house you might have been to, in 1976 it was completed and dedicated and given to the university. You'll see what our structure, we have 36 member board of directors, two ex officio members, we have a variety of standing council and committees that do a variety of our work. I want to highlight the seven specific areas that we drill into on a daily basis with the Alumni Association. We have a fantastic staff. I have Lisa Arvillo, our executive director, here with us today. We've identified seven key areas, and I want to touch on just a few of the high points. The first thing, which is critical, and this is something we really have changed. In the past, you waited for people to graduate, and then you'd go and try to attract them back to the university, which made zero sense. And so our first and foremost is to enrich the student experience. We want to attract students into what the Alumni Association is all about while we're here and while they're here, more importantly. And so we created the Danger Zone, which is the UAlbany Student Fan Club, which we felt was something that was sorely needed on campus. We had a great program named the Great Dane Nation. It was a campus-wide election. And toward that end, we provide every freshman now, when they first start school, with a Danger Zone t-shirt, and then transfers and graduate students, et cetera. We also promote the concept with them. And then during all the games, the Alumni Association and our board members and staff actively promote. If students are wearing the Danger Zone shirt, they get candy and water. We try to give them some perquisites and things that they don't get, and they'll say, oh, I want that. And say, well, if you wear your shirt, then you get it. And so we're trying to develop, in a small way, but it's been very successful. And we've got a lot of great feedback on the Danger Zone. We've partnered with the Student Association to handle the registration for the World Within Reach Speaker Series, and we've promoted that also financially to a great extent. We have a wonderful program, the Purple and Gold Ambassadors Program, which are high-achieving students on campus that represent ambassadors at a variety of university-wide events, and they also provide a great deal of service to the community. One of our great programs is we have a student mentor program. It's an online program. We want to facilitate alumni participation in mentoring, but make it something that's practical. And we've recruited over 175 new mentors to that program. This way, on a convenience factor, students can interact with people in a variety of fields and alumni and have a more spontaneous interaction without having the formalities of these mentoring programs in the past. We've provided over $100,000 for student scholarships, and we've also created a different kind of scholarship. We have school spirit scholarships, and we're excited about these. They're not academic-based scholarships. They're not based upon need. It's based upon those, the rah-rahs, as I'll call them, students that are actively engaged in school spirit. And as part of that, because of current technology trends, we put the whole process online to facilitate students applying for those scholarships, and that's been highly successful. Our third initiative is supporting institutional and academic priorities. And so you'll see in the report that we've helped provide underwriting for the SESTEM's 25th anniversary, Criminal Justice Symposium, alumni receptions, the School of Welfare luncheon, the Citizen Laureate Dinner, the School of Public Health, a variety of donor events and conferences, reunions, fundraising drives, et cetera, in the arts. Again, it's one of those critical areas. We want to support all the activities that the university engages in. Another wonderful program, and you're going to see a little bit of it today, I think, in the report from admissions. We want to help attract the best students to campus, and so we put together a variety of programs for that. We have coordinated and paid for a variety of accepted student receptions around the state, and one of the programs that I participated in is we've started to call accepted students to say, hey, we want you to come here, and so we've been working to actively call those, get parents on the phone and the students themselves. And even if they don't come here, we hope that they come here, but you get a great response, and it's something that they're, other prominent universities are doing, and we're trying to model some of those successful programs that you hear about. For years, we've heard about, well, other colleges do these types of things, why don't we? Well, again, we're trying to increase those types of activities that we engage in. We've also identified promoting the university brand and school affinity. And over the last year, we've established Women in Technology as an affinity group, a Five Quad group, and the Jewish Alumni Network. We also have a new program. Some of you may not be familiar, but class affinity really isn't where it's at now. People have an affinity to the university through their activities, etc. But instead of just discarding the whole class concept, one of the things is, along the lines of our wanting to engage students while they're here, we also want to engage what we call gold alumni, graduates of the last decade. In the past, you've heard, well, they got a 20th reunion or a 25th reunion or a 50th reunion. That's great, but you need to get them excited now. And because while they're excited now, then you'll be able to have them in a long-term engagement. So we have this gold group, graduates of the last decade, and we have wildly successful events with hundreds of these alums coming back. Regardless of year, they just want to hang out and have a good time. And so we've had a lot of great success with that. And we've done events in New York City and Boston as well. And then also, we used to have an alumni council of classes, which was based upon class year. But again, that affinity has changed, particularly in the last two decades. And so now we have an alumni volunteer council. Instead of having people come several times a year and talk about how wonderful the university is and have a cookie, we want to give people an opportunity to volunteer and engage in the life of the university in whatever form they want to do. And so we provide a variety of opportunities. So if someone has an excitement to do something, we'd rather get that one thing instead of pigeonholing them into something they may not be interested in. Something that's critical to the university is philanthropy, and we want to expand alumni engagement in philanthropy. We have a successful varsity club where we host pregame events to those who support athletics on campus. And we also have hosted lunches and dinners with the coaches to try to get those who are athletically minded excited about an opportunity that they wouldn't otherwise get. We've also hosted speaker series events, quote-unquote armchair discussions. The President Philip has participated in those, as well as Dean Siegel and also alumni entertainment. And we've hosted a variety of alumni donor receptions. And the other thing is a program that I participated in and I'm very excited about is the Donor Thank You Program. You often hear from people, they say, oh, the only time the university calls me is to ask me for money. And so we have a program now where we call donors to thank them. And I can tell you, invariably, this is what I get. Hi, this is Bill McCann, President of the Alumni Association. I already gave. And then I say, well, that's why I'm calling, because I want to thank you. And they're off, they're taken aback because you're the first person who's ever thanked me. And the other thing I find amazing are parents that give. And you figure with the cost of tuition and cost of higher education, the fact that parents make donations while their students are here, I always find that amazing. And so I take particular pride in thanking them, because to me that's, they're going above and beyond what you might expect of a one. But that's been a particularly wonderful program. And then finally, engaging alumni from diverse backgrounds. And so we host things you might be familiar with, like homecoming. We have a great event, the Big Purple Growl. We also host an Excellence Award Gala where we recognize alumni and their success, alumni ambassadors, reunions. We also have great regional events. We just had one for the MSG game, and it was a great event. It was over 400 people in attendance, and not one person complained. They all had a great time. It was right down the block from the garden, and it was a wonderful event. Just to give you some numbers, we had 21 regional events with about 1,000 people engaged, alumni. We've had the traditional class reunions. Our homecoming weekend, we had over 3,000 attendance for the Big Purple Brown Ferocious Feast. We had over 500 alumni and friends. And we have 5 affinity reunions with over 450 alumni participants. So we have a small staff at the Alumni Association, but I always say pound for pound, I would take them over any unit at the university. They do yeoman's work, and they work at extraordinary hours. They're not hourly employees. They just work. And again, Lisa Arvilla, our executive director, he just is a champ. He does a wonderful job, and we're lucky to have him engaged in our office. So that's a brief synopsis, and I'd be happy to have any questions.
Questions for Bill?
Good job.
That's a great report.
Great. Thank you.
You can cycle back up, George, to your report.
Yeah, I'm glad we had good news first. First of all, my apologies for being late. I was doing what I have to increasingly do, and that was meeting with the Hearst Foundation, and we have a couple of significant potential grants from the Hearst Foundation that we're working on, and our School of Public Health, as well as our School of Social Welfare, have done a wonderful job, and we're hoping to get an increased commitment by the Hearst Foundation and others. That's part of our task now, is to try and come up with as many alternative sources of funding as possible, and we're working very hard with foundations like Hearst, with our alums, with our business partners to try and build our portfolio. The budget is something, of course, that is on everybody's mind. No surprise. I mean, frankly, the condition of the state of New York has been well publicized relative to the deficit that exists. The governor's budget came out. Interestingly enough, I think the overall budget was reduced by 2.6%, but SUNY's cut was more along the lines of 10, 9 point something. SUNY's cut was $131.6 million, not Albany's, State University's cut. Our share, if that share is allocated in the same manner that it was done before, because we're not sure how the allocation process is going to merge, would be about another $10.6 million in cuts, $10.5 million in cuts for Albany. You do the math, that comes out to about $45.7 million in 3 years. That's adding in a $1.7 million mid-year cut that we were forced to take, which we really didn't publicize very much because I didn't think the community could take that news that we had another mid-year cut at $1.7 million.
Is it 10-5 all funds, or is it?
10-5 is state support only. The calculation of the 10-5, if it's done on state support and tuition, it's actually bad for us. It's good for low tuition schools. So the medical schools will do better if it's a calculation on both, which has been the case, and it's actually worse for us because of the enrollment numbers. I know the math works out worse for us.
Okay. Some of those dollars were leveraged with other funds, right? So if we pull our funds, we lose other funds.
So it's a
Now, we anticipated a budget cut. I mean, we weren't foolish enough to proceed without anticipating a budget cut. We did, however, anticipate a tuition increase. We thought we had a 2% tuition increase actually in the bank. That got taken out of the bank because nothing happened. We thought that was actually cast in concrete for last year. This year, we anticipated a tuition increase. The governor, in his state of this, in his budget announcement, did not support, did not include a tuition increase, and seemed to be quite pleased at the fact that he did not include a tuition increase. Going forward, we are going to. It is absolutely imperative for the university for us to pursue tuition increase. We have been great supporters of a rational tuition policy. You've heard me say this on many occasions. There's great debate about differential tuition. There isn't really a great debate about rational tuition. Rational tuition, basically, we need to be able to set a reasonable tuition increase on an annual basis. And I say reasonable. You know, I don't care if it's capped, you know, as long as it's not capped at 1%. You know, it has to be capped at a reasonable number. But with the caveat that we need to have some assurances that there will be a maintenance of effort on the part of the state of New York for public higher education. Because at the end of the day, a tuition increase that comes in lieu of state assistance every year is nothing but a regressive tax on our students. And that's not fair. It's not fair to the students. It's not fair to, you know, if you're asked to pay more for something, you should get something for that money that you're paying. And if all you're doing is filling holes or parts of holes with what you're paying, you're being taxed. And especially if you're paying, you know, filling holes in the state's general fund. So we need to have some level of maintenance of effort that is developed. That's been the assembly's argument in opposing tuition. Philosophically, I couldn't agree more because I do feel as that what we've been doing has been regressively taxing our students. But we do need tuition. We need tuition, and we need some level of maintenance of effort. There are other elements that are there that will have varying degrees of immediate impact on the university. Clearly, procurement will help in terms of the bureaucratic hoops that we go through. There will probably be some savings, which we frankly have pretty much realized anyway because of the level of budget cuts that we've been subjected to already. We're not going to see a whole lot of savings in the procurement arena.
What are they talking about through procurement? I'm just curious. Is it just
goods?
No. But are they saying processes? Are we allowed to now bid all these things?
Yeah, pre-audit. It's expediting. It's expediting the procurement process with the idea that there will be less bureaucracy, less hoops to jump through, less time consuming. Where you'll see the impact is in capital areas. Right now, there's huge delays that result because of the very, very cumbersome procurement process. If we can get a reasonable business-like process, an expedited process, even if it's just goods and not goods and services, it will help us save money on the capital side. Mm-hmm. It doesn't do much for me, or anything really for me, in terms of my operating budget.
Right. No.
Where my problem right now is the operating budget. That's where I need. Right. I don't really care. I mean, I care, but I don't necessarily. The issue on capital is not my immediate concern. Same thing with public-private partnerships. I think public-private partnerships over a longer period of time, will result in additional revenue for the university. Doesn't do much for me right now.
Yeah, you can't shift funds around. Yeah.
It doesn't do much for me right now.
It's not too much money to get the partnership going. We do these. I mean, you know that.
Yeah.
And by the time we get one of these going, it takes 2 or 3 years before it's cash flowing. Net cash flow, even with the grants, even with, you know, ESDC stuff, everything, DASNY, you just don't get any net cash.
Right.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
And it's, again, it's...
That's what George needs.
Yeah, the
cash.
concept is great, and I think over the long term, you know, whoever's sitting in my chair, the next will benefit from it. But at this point, I need to have the something for the university now.
George, isn't it fair to say, though, that the Assembly, I mean, isn't willing to go along with this tuition, unilateral tuition choice? Is that the problem?
The original problem in terms of the rational tuition policy was the control of that tuition process by the trustees. I think that's by the boards. I think right now we would be more than happy to accept a 5-year rational tuition plan that was approved through the legislature.
Right.
But I need to have
be okay with.
Yeah, I need to have some
you can get it.
Assurance of additional revenue going forward that we can count on, you know, to basically pay our faculty, you know, to sustain what we have at this university. So we need to have, I mean, if I had my druthers, first and foremost, I'd like to see restoration. Restoration of the massive cuts that we've taken over the last 3 years, or restoration of part of those massive cuts. You know, that, you know, probably in $4 might get me a cup of coffee, but I doubt very much we're going to get much in terms of restoration because through no fault of the state's in dire circumstances, and with a projection, incidentally, of additional shortfalls for next year and the year after. The 5-year tuition plan, I think, is critically important for us. I think we need to have some sort of a reasonable way of projecting a budget and some additional revenue. Maintenance of effort has to go along with tuition increases because I cannot in good conscience sit down with our students and argue that tuition increases are in their own best interest when in fact they're going to be in lieu of state assistance and just filling in potholes. I can't do that. It's not honest for our students. Procurement flexibility is fine. You know, it's not going to be a big hit, but it's fine, and it will help us on the capital side. And public-private partnerships over the long term will create another avenue for revenue for the university and will help us, but it won't help us now. It's not something that we'll deal with now. Yes?
I have a question. With the proposed cuts, is there any reassurance that there won't be other cuts after a grade? See, that's what concerns me more, that you get the budget plan, and if you don't think in terms of that, that becomes another issue. The second issue is that when you talk with the Assembly, do they have any idea of what kind of university this is and where you want to go and how this impacts the state, the communities, et cetera, et cetera?
You know, we are going to announce a new economic impact study, which is actually quite old at this point because by the time you get through all the process, it will increase the number, and it's not our metrics, it's outside metrics, so it's not less, you know, promoting ourselves by coming up with, you know, phony multipliers. And it will be, it'll be a staggeringly meaningful number. You know, I've argued vociferously, loudly, that if we move this university from the city of Albany and the state of New York, that it would be a huge hole because we're a profit center. But people don't realize that if you tax affect our economic impact, we're a profit center. You know, the pittance that they give us, the $63 million that we get in state assistance, is a drop in the bucket relative to what our impact is when you tax affect the economic impact of this university. If we move to New Jersey, New Jersey could give us $63 million, and it would be a hell of an investment. But at the end of the day, we try very hard to get our message across. The individual campus messages are pretty much absorbed into the, quote, state message. Our delegation knows full well, you know, our importance, you know, and we can argue that. Any of you have been, you know, with me at sessions, I am very passionate when I argue with any legislative or gubernatorial people about this university and what we mean to the region and what we mean to the state, what our students, what the university is all about. You know, there was a button last year that the union was passing out, and it said SUNY is the answer. I kept that button because I firmly believe that public higher education is the answer. We are not part of the problem. We are the answer relative to bringing this state economy back into to a thriving economy and further diversifying the state's economy so we are not subject, you know, to vagaries in one industry.
Don't they see, too, why focusing on one group? why the Chinese, why they're sending their kids here. And that if we don't do something, that again, these are the people we're going to compete. Otherwise, you're going to train them and then compete against them. I saw many, back in the 90s, when I used to go out of Northwestern a lot, and they're the Kellogg School, the Germans sent all of their students there in large numbers. And now, of course, those students are back, and they're a part of their economy, and one reason why they're moving forward. And I can't understand why they can't see what a vital role university plays, and what the future, if we're going to compete globally, how important it is. And sometimes you have to make cuts and adjustments. But in this particular situation, to me, this means your future. I mean, this is in my mind, that's what it looks like. And I can't understand why you can't, why that's so difficult to get across.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Just a follow-up. I mean, so, okay, so we're looking at this new draconian problem. I mean, now you go to that plan B that you had last year, where we got that second tier of drop-offs in terms of...
The next step for us is, first of all, we are in the process of finalizing the, quote, bag three.
Four.
Well, bag four is coming up. Three is we got more bags around here than I'm the oldest bag in the place here. So, the bag three recommendations are going to be finalized. And at the end of the day, it is what it is. Nobody wants to make cuts. Right now, we have, by the end of 2012, we will have reduced the workforce at this university by 366 people across the board. Now, most people don't see that. All of the argument, all the protest is over 12 people.
Right.
But the 366
over the last...
Through 2012, right now, with what we've got so much in the bank...
Over four years.
It'll be 300.
This is that staggering program where...
Yeah, well, we have union contracts we have to deal with. We have notice periods that we have to deal with.
Right.
We have program... phasing outs that we have to deal with. There are all kinds of issues there. And, truthfully, what's happened is that we also, ad hoc cuts based on vacancies, you can't sustain. You've got to basically resupport areas that have been suffered great cuts. I use the Steve's lines in terms of the mechanics that can then keep the heating plant going. Well, this heating plant is so old that we no longer manufacture parts. we fabricate our parts. Well, we had a number of people that know how to fabricate the parts. And you might not be surprised to know that they're my age or older. And they decided, well, what the hell, I'm leaving. If they retire, we got to figure out how the hell we're going to fabricate parts to keep this physical plant working, because you can't go out and buy them. There's no catalog that says you can buy parts for these things. So, I mean, there are levels of reinvestment that you have to make in order to keep the enterprise going forward. Nobody, and I mean nobody, on this campus feels worse about having somebody not get or lose a job. Nobody does. I mean, I didn't sign on to fire people. I hope to grow this enterprise, not to retrench it. So anyway, we're now going to the next step, which is bag four. We've done our very best to get as many of our incredibly committed faculty members and staff members, because we have lots of very committed people at all of these different levels. The only one who's entitled to commitment is me, but they're committed. We will then move forward to look at create a campus-wide budget body. We will try and come up with a plan that will enable us to move forward in an environment with, continually shrinking resources. If we get no tuition relief, then their job is going to be very difficult. If we get some tuition relief and we get, this is just too wishful thinking, some level of restoration, their job won't be that bad. At the end of the day, however, we also have to think about what is this going to look like in 2013, what's it going to look like in 2014, because this process of continually going back to the well you know, restructuring and then restructuring your restructured environment, and then restructuring that is, you know, it's incredibly difficult. So we need to come up with a plan, the strategic plan that Sue will talk about as part of her presentation. We'll provide a template. The BAG4 efforts will give us a good opportunity to vet investments on the part of the university, address areas of strength and weakness, address opportunities to save money at different levels. We'll create, I hope, a balanced report. By balanced report, I don't want a report that says cut all administration, cut all athletics, okay, leave everything else alone, and that's it. That's our plan. That's just not what we're there. But that being said, as part of what we're going to do is move forward. We're in the process of doing an RFP for which will be done with not state money but soft money, to do a management study to look at the management structure and the administration of this university. To have outside pairs of eyes look at it to determine areas where we can cut back, areas of efficiency, areas of consolidation. So it'll start at the top, so that, and I'm very hopeful that they say that one of the jobs that's not necessary is mine, but it, we will start at the top and make sure that that we are appropriately assessed. And that's an area where, frankly, I think an outside pair of eyes is more important, and we'll have more credibility by having an outside pair of eyes.
So you bring like an EY or a PwC or someone coming in?
EY or a Bain or a McKenzie or whatever coming in. I think Bain and McKenzie are in the mix, and a few other firms that are there. But it will not be someone that I have a relationship with, because I know when I had mentioned that I was going to try and get one of my old colleagues. It will be not someone I have a relationship with. It will be a purely arm's length transaction. And they will come in here without any briefing as to, and there are no sacred cows. That'll be protected. Nobody will be protected. They'll come in, they'll look at it, and we will basically give their recommendations very, very strong consideration.
What's the time frame for that?
Well, the RFP is going on the street.
We did an
RFI already.
An RFI. Or two, got responses, opened those a couple of weeks ago. He's out of those a lot of good ideas. We're wrapping it into an RFP. We should hit the street in the next week or two. So and we're going to use an expedited process. Fardeen has been good enough to backstop us with foundation money, so we don't have to go through the business team of state.
If we had to use state money, I would be dead before we got it going.
Yeah.
So we will use non-state money so we can get this thing going quickly.
So they're looking at a future state? I don't understand. Are they doing best practices?
I think it's great.
I'm just trying to understand.
Well, I think what we're looking for, one, is not only best practices and how to structure it, but truthfully, what I'm interested in, efficiencies.
Yeah.
I'm interested in where we can consolidate, where we can create synergies among different areas, where we have redundancies.
Gotcha. Makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
Two questions. The first one is just a point of information. What would, with these $45 million reductions over 3 years, I think I got that right.
Four years.
What is now the percentage of state subsidy?
Pardon?
That number that keeps going down of state subsidy, what is that now?
Right now, if we end up, and it doesn't actually go, the math doesn't, because we have mandatory costs built in back out.
Right.
The number will go down to 50-something?
Yeah, high 50s.
57 or $58 million.
And what's that percentage of our overall?
About 35 or 40.
It'll be down from 15 down to 13 or 13%.
You're looking at the 13. I thought you were talking about the total state aid that we lost.
No, 13% of our budget is
operating state. Our operating budget.
It's down to 13. Well, so when we started, I've been on this group what 3 or 4 years. It was up at 17 or something, wasn't it?
It was almost 18 when you started.
It was 43 in 1990.
Yeah. I actually had a similar kind of question. A 1 or 2, or pick a percent, I don't care which, increase in tuition, how much would that be? Like 2%?
About every percent increase in tuition is about $900,000.
But is that going to go right to you, or does it go into the pot?
Well, assuming it went, assuming we didn't have to give it back
goes,
to the...
Assuming it goes to us.
Directly, yeah.
Directly. Let's put it, assuming it, the process right now would be collected by the state, appropriated back to the university. If it was done without a haircut, that's what the number is, nine-something for every 1%.
My second question was, and I think I asked this at the last meeting too, but is there any talk at the SUNY Central level of trying to do some kind of system-wide, essentially what you're doing here, but system-wide rational plan that involves all the campuses and trying to figure, because every campus is trying to do, is trying to become an alchemist, or find the alchemist who can manufacture gold for them, and there's, you know...
Here comes the Scandinavian Studies program.
That's the issue. The issue right now is that can the University at Albany, in a vacuum, solve this problem? The answer is no.
Yeah, and that's,
there's no way. I mean, Bag Four is truthfully has an insoluble problem.
Yeah,
because without statewide addressing of this and. Now, there are questions that have to be asked. I mean, do we need 64 campuses? Right. I mean, that's a question.
No, absolutely.
I mean, no one wants to ask that question. But do we need 64 campuses?
But you could ask the simpler question, which is, at least among campuses, can we rationalize programs? So that if, for example, Albany were to take over another campus, not in a, like in a corporate world, where you have your economies on the admin side, but, you know, campus over here offers XYZ programs, campus over there, you know, ABC programs. I mean, that to me, it would be...
That's
64 German programs.
That's what I'm talking about.
That
I mean, I understand the politics of that.
It seems to me
a little easier than saying, let's shut...
Well, there's two types of politics. There's politics and there's academic politics.
Right.
And Suzanne, I'm looking at Suzanne, but she's smiling, so, you know,
I'm waiting to hear what you say, John.
There are 17 French programs in SUNY. You know, you'd say, well, do we need 17 French programs?
Right.
Well, let's put it this way. The largest number of graduates from any single one of those French programs in any one year has been 6. At the end of the day, that's a legitimate question that you would ask, that I would ask, in terms of that, because of our different backgrounds. It's not an easy question to deal with in an academic environment. I think that's a fair statement, right?
Yes.
It's not an easy question to deal with in an academic environment.
It's just easier than saying shutting one. I mean, you know, it's easier than the 64
there's absolutely no question.
Campus and, question. That's
and
all.
Saying that, you should focus on this and this and this and you, mm-hmm. you know, well, I don't want to, first of all, I know that there are people that say that we're, that I'm driving us to be a trade school. I've heard that. That's my most recent slam. We're not driving towards a trade school. We're not anywhere near going towards being a trade school in terms of this. But, at the end of the day, are we going and to be able to, in the long term, be able to be all things to all people?
Of course not.
We can't. It's just not going to be able to happen.
SUNY can, but individually.
SUNY can if it coordinates itself as an entity. I mean, it seems like you have all the problems of bureaucracy and none of the benefits the way it functions now. I mean, I'm sorry.
Legislators have never run a school system.
For example, we do not have a SUNY-wide enterprise software system. Now, for those of you who are in business, one of my pet peeves here is, and one of the people who are taking, a lot of people say, I'm pounding the hell out of IT here, because truthfully, I'm not happy with what I'm seeing, but I'm even more unhappy over the fact that, we have a state university system where we've probably got 64 separate enterprise software systems that are in place all over the place. Who's that young man? Are you a reporter?
we didn't tell George to run the New York Times with us today.
Oh, you're doing the paper. I'm sorry. Okay. I kept looking over. I'm saying,
he's from SUNY and he's here to help, George.
Too late.
But, I mean, think about this being in business and having a holding company model, which is what we should have. Unfortunately, it's an operating company model. It should be a holding company model. But think about that and having those things that a holding company is most valuable at, and we don't have that.
That's why vendors love working with the state. They kill it.
divide and conquer. It's pretty sad.
George?
Yes.
Question. So I can get it clear. When you bring this the organization and do the assessment, they will have seen the strategic plan. They will know what we're trying to do, where we want to go, and so forth. And they will do the assessment based on that.
Yeah, they will. They will. They will know what we're doing, what we're all about. They'll understand the university, but their assessment of the administrative structure here, frankly, my idea behind that is that what is the most efficient and cost-effective way to run this university, and forget about current staffing, forget about this is going to be, you know, how can I run this place the cheapest possible way. So that when I'm sitting there looking at that a budget, that no one's going to be able to turn around and say that all the fat's at the top. You know, I trust me. I look in the mirror. I know there's lots of fat here. And I think that's important. I think that's a gesture that this president's office has taken a bigger cut than other places. It's even particularly more difficult with the president's office because. In the president's office is a department, our internal audit department. It's a two-man shop. Can't cut that. It's an enterprise like this has a two-man shop. I have a four-person legal shop. I can't cut that because, frankly, they're actually SUNY employees. So that's part of my budget. So when you think about all of the ancillary activities, our diversity operation is part of my budget. That's already understaffed to begin with. So we take the cuts directly in the office at a percentage of those areas that I can't touch. So if you look at my total office, you got to ring a bell when you walk into the president's office. Next year, you might ring a bell and no one will come because of the circumstances that are there. But it's important to me that we take a hit which is equal to or greater than everybody else. I don't want to be an outlier in the other way. I'd rather be an outlier, in a negative way. I think administration of the university has to basically pass muster. And I know we're not the most efficient possible enterprise there is. Now, who knows? They may turn around and say, you guys are so lean, you can't be efficient. You got to go the other way. I mean, I'm hoping that's not the case, but I want this to be a totally objective process. And the results to be totally objective. I want people to basically have, I want the report to have credibility going forward. We're going to look at, and Lee and I have spent hours, more hours, lovely, but more hours than I want to spend with them, talking about athletics and the role of athletics on this campus and the monies that are spent on athletics. One of the dilemmas that we run into is that there are too many people around here. Am I going too long?
No,
oh.
You're fine.
There are too many people around here that have a very simplistic answer. Yeah. Basically, cut athletics, cut administration, and we're all set, in terms of that. Well, first of all, if you cut all of athletics and you cut all of administration on the state side, you've gotten about 20% of the budget cuts. If you cut everybody, then there's nothing left if you just basically, have an empty building. It's way too simplistic an approach to look at, but... we have to make sure that everybody is included in this process, and there'll be difficult decisions. But for example, athletics, certain cuts will require Fardeen writing big checks, $1.5 million, $1.48 million on one program cut, give money back. Yeah. And we got to think about how much money we have to give back when we cut programs, because we got committed monies that have come in. And these things. So there's lots of other issues that have to be addressed relative to, where we are as an institution. And the other thing is that there is also a student experience.
Yeah.
And we got to think about the students, because at the end of the day, they're already the ones getting screwed on this deal. Yeah.
And then we have to hit them up in 4 years, and it's going to give back.
True, and frankly, we're going to.
Listen to Bill; he's hitting him up as freshman.
You wanted to get out of here early, and I told you I was going to be a problem for you. All right, the strategic plan you're going to talk about, enrollment management. We continue to have a very successful process in enrollment management. Our applications are pretty much as high as they once were. They're slightly lower than they had been last year at this point. I'm hoping. that some of the negative publicity that we generated on our own at this university hasn't impacted our application pool. But I'm hoping that's not the case, that we haven't done it. But our admitted classes are good. We have more admitted freshmen this year than we did last year in terms of that. Our academic quality is again slightly stronger than the year before. We continue to have a good numbers in terms of presidential scholarships. I believe presidential scholarships are up 15%, which is a good number. And our admissions people are doing an extremely good job under very difficult circumstances because they've taken big budget cuts. Again, a little bit of a digression in terms of reinvestment. If you look at New York State's demographics, and we have some very good demographers and professors in our college that have estimated that the number of high school graduates in the next decade will decline by 30% in the state of New York. That the makeup of the graduating classes will be significantly different. 40% of the graduating classes will be what we consider minorities in the current level. And what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to structure a program going forward to address the fact that we're going to have fewer high school graduates, that we're going to have to look for non-traditional sources of our students, and we're going to have to actively engage in out-of-state and international recruitment for this university. So that costs money. To have recruiters go out of state, we need to have more people involved with the recruitment activities. So we need to spend money to make money at the end of the day. So that's another thing that we have to make clear to people, that if we're going to come up with an answer to, forget the budget, you know, the budget's flat going forward. We still have an issue, a demographic issue, that we have to face in the future, and that we need to be able to address that both through out-of-state and international recruitment, and that's going to cost us money to be able to do that. We will start using, to a limited extent, agents for international students, but it'll be agents that have been cleared through a SUNY process. We don't use them at this point because we've been very successful without. We have a very good internal process, but we're going to complement it on that. But those are the things where they may not be investments that people think about in terms of, you know, well, why are you putting in an enrollment? Well, if you don't get enrollment, you don't have a need for faculty, you know, at the end of the day. So we need to make sure that we sustain a level of enrollment that is important that for the university. Our students are doing very well. Our graduations our graduation rates are going up. Our retention numbers are going up. That all bodes well for the university. Our full-time faculty student ratio continues to decline or get worse. You know, the number gets bigger.
What is it currently?
Depending on how you measure it, it's 25-point-something. 25-point-something. You know, we were aspiring to the mediocre, which is 17.
Right.
I guess we can. I'll be long dead before we aspire to the mediocre. And rather than go through, where's Jim? Jim Diaz has been is our newly appointed permanent vice president for research. Jim was our interim, and congratulations, Jim. We have declared a failed search because we have an interim vice president for finance and business, which is irreplaceable. He's irreplaceable. So he's decided to continue with us. He hates me. He barely speaks to me because it's probably the worst job in the world. Steve Bettitz, which is right down there incidentally. Steve, we should all thank Steve for being willing to continue to what is a thankless job as a VP for Finance and Research.
Thank you, Steve.
And I have a long list of very, very wonderful awards and things for our faculty and staff, but if I do that, Dan will kill me.
You can catch up with George later on Twitter.
Do you really,
George? One last thing, because Pierre just reminded me, just to remind everybody that we had UAlbany Day last week, last Monday, February 7th. It was a very busy day. We started out at 7:30 in the morning with a round table with some of our faculty from the Rockefeller College, and we finished at I finished at 11:30 after having dinner with Senator LaValle. So it was one of those days that was very lengthy, and seriously lost my car in the parking lot. I was so that's embarrassing. But I came out of the restaurant, and we had closed the restaurant. We had a back room. Came out of the restaurant. And I said, I have no idea where to park. It was just, in any event, we did a lot of visitation with our legislative officials. Some of it very successful, some of it quite disturbing. Lee will report someday over a beer on one of his visits that was very disturbing. We managed to meet with the speaker. Spent some time with the speaker. We spent some time with Deb Glick. I did, with the speaker and Deb Glick. And, I thought that it was a very, very good day. I thought we basically did a good job with our message because we let the students give it. And they're the best spokespersons in the world because they're articulate and they're passionate and they did a very, very good job. And I think on the over, we did a good job promoting the institution. Whether we got any money is another story, but we did a good job promoting the institution.
Is there one thing, George, that they say or anything you took away that if we did something differently as far as our advocacy would be more effective? Do they say, hey, you guys need to do a film blank? Do they give you any feedback like that? Well, I know we have the whole bobble.
There was feedback. I mean, you know, Lee got feedback that we should go back to being a teacher's college.
That's helpful.
Yeah.
It's true or not, right? That we should go back to being a teacher's college.
Tell them we should go back to New York State. Should go back to being a monarchy.
that was very passionate feedback that Lee got from an individual. We got feedback in terms of they would support tuition increases if there was a maintenance of effort. Incidentally, if any of you know a good definition of maintenance of effort, I would appreciate it if you would tell me. Because I sure as hell don't know what it is. Because there's 18 different approaches to maintenance of effort, whether it's percentage, whether it's... I have no idea. I really have no idea what it is.
I could give you an extreme one.
Yeah, you could give me a...
We collect tuition directly here, and we don't send it to SUNY, to the state.
Yeah. Well, I think
I mean, that's what they did in Virginia. The schools got it. Get it now direct.
Get it directly. I mean, first of all...
It solves the problem.
But just open a PayPal account and have the students send it that way.
Yeah,
I mean...
So we don't have an appropriations process.
It would complicate the finance job in some respects, but it would also...
Well, James hit it on the head. I didn't acknowledge it before.
But that's...
In terms of this whole idea of what is most dangerous, which is even worse, are the mid-year cuts. The mid-year cuts are the ones... Even when you go through all of this process... that we go through with bags and we anticipate. When they come up with just something out of the blue on a mid-year basis, it just kills you. I mean, absolutely kills you. I mean, as bad as it is to plan for what you anticipate, planning for what you can't anticipate is even worse. So, any other questions?
I don't want to belabor it, but one more question. I mean, I know I brought this up. So there's no vehicle, no authority here for us to charge... forget tuition, but some other kind of fee or something where, it's a backdoor, veiled way of generating revenue here at our place as opposed to shipping it. Is there any way that
we can do that?
Well, first of all,
we charge fees at this university that are equal to or greater than virtually all of the others.
Right.
So our fees are not tappable, so that if you're a student that requires tuition assistance... Fees are not something that you can get assistance for. Fees are subject to SUNY approval, and SUNY is loath to approve them because the legislature has caught on to the fact that fees are backdoor tuition increases, and they will not go along with them. So when we get fees, we get 1% increases, we get $10, that's the sort of thing. The TAP cap is $5,000. Tuition is $4,970. There's another $25 doohickey in there that is subject to Now, it's not a surprise that that total comes out to $4,995 because the TAP cap is $5,000. Now, they need to work on the TAP cap, but...
I would say the fees are also restricted. We can charge a transportation fee, but
For transportation. If you charge a fee for health, you don't use it for something else.
There's not a bucket of discretion right now. It's the fee as frankly a backdoor way of collecting something.
Run it through the alumni association.
Off-campus programs.
And get the deductions.
Off-campus programs.
We're working on that. Programs that are not tuition-bearing in the state appropriation sense, but that do get to other educational markets, other students who consume their educational snacks in units other than 120 credits.
Right.
Starting at age 18. So we are opening a continuing professional adult and continuing education door through which...
What about private stuff? Not private, but what about utilizing, going the other way? Instead of the adult side, what about the more junior side? In other words, you know, the children type of thing and things like that, where you have this constant, at least in New York City, this constant effort where my kids, for example, are exposed constantly to these programs, and I'm always being told, you know, let's get Jack or Kai into this thing and that thing and all that. You know, and frankly, there are things that during downtime, during time when, you know, the students aren't available and things like that. I mean, in other words, you have a plant here. Is there any way that you can utilize that plant for privatization, essentially, as a backdoor way to generate revenue, but going the other way, the children as opposed to adults?
They're being bored. We actually do some of that. We have summer programs that we bring in students on campus. They actually bring revenue to the dorms, less revenue to the campus coffers, but certainly to the dorms, and then a break-even kind of initiative. What's more lucrative, actually, is our university and the high school program, in which students can earn college credit for taking courses
at Chaminade,
their school.
You were allowed as a senior. You could take your entire year at CW Post, the school we first started.
See, that university and high school, which has basically been our brand for many, many years, unfortunately, is being tread upon. Because the community colleges are now deciding that that's an opportunity for them. And here's the dilemma. The dilemma is the community colleges have not, or don't rely on state support, but as much as they do county support. And they're able to provide, and with the articulation agreements that are out there, we're going to have to take those community college credits, they're able to provide them for free, or next to free, much cheaper than we can. If mom and dad are looking at, you know, taking, I'll use Spanish, God forbid I should use the other language, using Spanish, getting Spanish credit in the high school, and it's X dollars from the university, and it's 0.2X at the community college, mom and dad are going to pay 2.2X, because the likelihood is that we're going to end up eating that credit anyway, going forward. So everybody is out there. Turn on your newspaper if you live in Albany, and they turn on your radio, and you will hear Oswego's advertisements about their MBA programs. You know, turn on
Channel 9 advertises Plattsburgh.
Yeah, if you go to Plattsburgh, if you go to Adirondack Community College, Plattsburgh is offering baccalaureate degrees at Adirondack Community College.
And Hudson Valley.
Really? We are in an environment where, I object.
We're eating ourselves.
We are, and frankly, there needs to be state coordination.
That comes back to the same question we were talking about before.
We should consider also, and this would be eating someone else.
I'm all for that.
How much extra do we get for out-of-state tuition? I mean, it seems to me that the cost of, you know, hiring a person, and maybe we do it privately through the foundation, to say, go focus on the northern half of New Jersey and drum up, and I don't know how many students we'd need, but...
New Jersey's...
This is the recruiting thing you're talking about.
New Jersey's in-state
but do it,
tuition is $12,000 and change.
Bob knows this better.
Yeah, I think it's like $12,000 and change. Our out-of-state tuition is $14,000.
It's
13 and change.
It's almost the same.
Yeah, well, let me tell you something. I'd be more than happy to discount If you live in New Jersey, I'll discount our our out-of-state tuition to your in-state tuition fees, and I'll take your son.
Or daughter.
I mean, at the end of the day, absolutely what we need to do is start going out there and competing for these out-of-state students. Right. Now, let me tell you something. The model is just the opposite. The state comptroller did a report last year and suggested that we charge the rates that the University of North Carolina are charging for out-of-states, or Virginia, or Vermont. You know, Vermont's, frankly,
like
a private school.
Tuition, yeah.
But, I mean, we cannot compete in out-of-state markets charging $25,000. When we went to $13,000 and change, but when we went to $13,000 and change, Bob, our out-of-state enrollment dropped from like 7 to 6 or 7 to 5 because of the tuition increase.
We peaked at 7, but now we're down just over 5%.
Yeah. I mean, it's...
Well, but it seems to me maybe what you do, though, is rather than worrying about something formally under the operating budget, is you put it under, you know, we have the... call it the special recruiting program under the foundation. Sorry for him, but basically it's
is a part of this.
But you know what I mean. We do it sort of off the operating budget books so that we don't get caught in a political firestorm. And we just, you know, I mean, to me that we should find money for something.
There's no reason
why we can't. If we find it for McKinsey,
can't.
We can find it for that. I mean. Yeah.
No, well, there's no reason. There's absolutely no reason for this. There's no reason why we can't. Do that, even under the current constraints. There's no reason why we can't go out and heavily recruit out of state, and we could discount.
We rebate to UConn or Rutgers or whatever it is.
Well, we're not going to rebate. We discount to them. We could rebate to their rates.
That's what I'm saying.
In terms of that, we can do that now. We can do that using the foundation. We can do that using scholarship funds that are available to the. What we need right now is to apply our resources in that area. We are the ones that have been remiss at investing in that. That's our fault. I can't blame the state of New York for that. That's us.
Do the other university centers do better without out-of-state students than we do?
Yeah. Yes, the centers do.
They do.
Yeah. And that incidentally gives them additional resources that we don't have. And shame on us. Shame on us, because we need to be doing.
Is there a cap on out-of-state?
No.
There's no cap.
Well, there will be a cap if we start hitting 30%.
Right. Fine. But right now there's no cap.
Let's not worry about it until we get up there, right, yeah.
No, that's
I mean, you know, just
that's us. We should be reinvesting in that. We should be heavily investing in that. And one of the things is we need to basically explain to people who are saying, why are you investing in that? That bottom line is that that's an investment that's going to generate a return, a significant return.
Right.
Yeah.
First of all, Bill Clinton is coming on campus. If you haven't asked for your tickets and you're interested, make sure that you talk to the staff about those tickets. As a wrap-up, I just want to thank you guys for the hard work that you do and all of the efforts on behalf of the university for your interest. We will be calling on you as we move forward for additional advocacy. We will be calling on you for help. Frankly, we haven't. The current governor does not have a staff person that's been assigned to education or higher education at this point. So we really don't have an entry point to be able to do some of the things. But that will happen. I mean, you got to give him time to be able to create what he has. But legislative support is something that we can always help. We're concerned about pilots, which is another issue that is occupying my immediate attention at this point. I may have to call on some of you to, because we need to have a very strong legislative support in that arena. So, there are lots. It's a never-ending battle, guys.
Thank you, George. Any questions for George? More questions? New business, Sue? Strategic plan.
Good to see you all again. As you know, I have been bringing the strategic plan to you at various points in its development, starting with the design, and I think the last time I saw you in November was reporting on the almost final product. We now have not only the final product, but the final product that you can have on your desktop. I know you already have a copy of this, but you need two to give to somebody else. And wanted to just share with you our launch video in just a minute. I'm in the process now of developing the implementation plan, which I'm sure I'm going to come back to you at the next meeting with. But wanted to share with you the video that we made to just showcase what we were doing, where we were going with it. And let me see if I can get that going here. Give a little energy and lift to us.
The world is changing. It is faster, more complex, more connected than ever before. It's a world with new challenges to
incidentally and produced on campus for virtually no cost.
So it's a changing landscape lies the new mission for the University at Albany. To expand knowledge and transform minds in order to shape the future of our community and our world. While we don't know what tomorrow will bring, we do know that there's only one way to meet the challenges of the world ahead, and that's together. At the center of what we do is an unwavering commitment to excellence. We will continue to provide a rigorous undergraduate experience that prepares the next generation of transformative leaders. We'll leverage our unique position to open doors for our students, power opportunities for our researchers, and create meaningful connections within our communities. Excellence and value differentiate us. Diversity distinguishes us. Our strategic location in the Capital Region provides UAlbany the extraordinary ability to refine our strengths and redefine our possibilities as a world-class public research institution. From the dreams of our students, to the ingenuity of our faculty, to the dedication of our staff, and the achievements of our alumni, we are inspired to strengthen the bonds of our UAlbany family. As a community, on campus and off, we'll uphold our traditions of inclusiveness, forging connections, and celebrating a global perspective. Through innovative partnerships, UAlbany will be outstanding in preparing, supporting, and advancing knowledge on every level, on every front. We commit to exploring the emerging fields that will shape our world and pledge to create a culture that turns promise into progress. We will actively advance and promote our preeminent graduate programs to attract and retain the best and the brightest. Led by our outstanding faculty and guided by our new priorities, we will push forward the bounds of knowledge with our world-class research, scholarship, and creative endeavors. UAlbany will nurture, promote, and support academic frontiers that captivate imaginations, deepen understanding, and earn recognition in the intellectual community and beyond. We will bring innovation to every corner of every campus, and will modernize to improve the quality of life for those who live, learn, work, and visit here. Our campuses will be sustainable sources of pride and engines for intellectual and economic growth. Finally, through strategic partnerships, we will cultivate and harness the powers of our local, regional, and global communities to enrich our lives and address the critical issues of the 21st century. From forging public-private collaborations, to building educational pipelines, to creating meaningful community connections, we will be the bridge to a better world. A new way forward requires new thinking, new actions. Most of all, it calls for the courage to come together, to embrace the challenge, and to lead the way into the world ahead. The University at Albany, the world within reach.
Fantastic job of video creation on the part of our communications and media folks. and an inspirational launch to our strategic plan. The same six goals that you heard the last time: undergraduate education, graduate education, student experience, research, outreach and partnership, and infrastructure and technology, but packaged in a really cool package and ready for launch and implementation as we go forward. So I'm sure I'll be back to you again and tell you what the next steps are.
What is to pay for it?
I got it paid for.
It's all within reach.
All within reach.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Sue. Lee,
are you still here?
I'm still here and I'm awake, believe it or not. I have no money and no video. So still the paper. But as George said, we're still going to. You got enough to pass those down to your right, sir.
I got it. If I could, do you mind if I just did a brief intro on why Lee is. It's part of the NCAA athletics self-study and peer review that is underway. Started last March. It's going through, and I had the opportunity to sit on the subcommittee for governance. And one of the questions was, what does the university council have to do with the athletic program and a number of other stuff for the self-study? And we came up with a number of inputs that the council had. And it was suggested at the time that we could include a next step for the council, and we suggested that we have we have Lee come before the council on an annual basis. We discussed this as a possibility of a last resolution in the last meeting, on a regular basis to enhance our governance understanding of the athletic program. So with that background.
Thank you, Pierre. Let me just say briefly, Pierre mentioned recertification. Sue is the chair of our steering committee. There are 20 members of that steering committee. Pierre mentioned three subcommittees. Governance is one. Student-athlete well-being, gender diversity is two, and academic integrity is three. They are just about completed with their reports, and they're going to be submitted to Sue and George for review and comment within the next month or so. So that's moving along very well. What you have before you is just an overview with some historical tidbits of what we're doing, and how we govern ourselves, our marching orders and our goals and objectives, how we move forward, a little bit of our background in terms of who we compete against and what we try to do in terms of academics, leadership, and also athletic competition. And in looking at this, as Pierre said, the essence of your involvement is to make sure, one, you're aware of what we're doing, two, that you have a sense of how we're doing it, and three, as George already touched upon this, the resources that are involved in terms of the level of investment. So I'm not going to go through all of this. Dan would help me out in the streets if I did. But there are some good things in here. Suffice it to say, three things take away from this, council members. Academically, your student-athletes do as well or better than the general student population. We graduate at 75%, which is higher than the general student population. We have 43 conference championships in 8 years. That is more than Stony Brook and Buffalo and Bloomington combined. And by way of contrast, Siena has been in Division I business for 30 years longer than us, and they have less than 20 championships over almost a 45-year period. So we're doing all the things the right way. I'm not going to get on.
Siena's not a benchmark or anything.
Do you find that your success is working against you right now, in the sense that it profiles more, you know, what's going on in athletics, you know, all the success that you've had, put you out there for?
Well, I think I spent 3 weeks ago, Dan, Mark Emmerich is the new president of the NCAA. He's been in the office now for 4 months. He was formerly president at UConn when they took their football program 1A. He was president at LSU when Nick Saban was the highest paid football coach in the country. And then he went to University of Washington and fired two coaches and made them the two highest paid. So he gets a sense of what's going on. And I think we just need to do a better job. And one of the things I mentioned in here is a message of synergy between academics and athletics. We've not done a good job of that. And you raise a good point as a result of it. And George has made very clear to everyone on campus that athletics has been cut disproportionately than the academic side, but nobody will listen.
Right.
And as you say, they want a big media blast, and that's just not the case. So we've been hurt by some of that. We've also been hurt by the fact that people, when they look into the economic pie, only see certain elements of it, and that element is to survive. And so when you have that kind of environment where people are looking at survival, then everybody goes except for themselves. So we get that. You know, this is my fourth institution that I worked at. I understand that. I understand faculty covenants very well.
This is Lee talking, not me. This has nothing to do with me. I'm disavowing him early.
It doesn't change a lot on various campuses. So I understand it and I get it, and we'll make it work. I will say this in closing. George mentioned reductions, and he mentioned the $43 million over a four-year period, a three-and-a-half-year period, or whatever it is. We've lost 11 positions, and it's over $1 million, and we're headed toward 14. And I will tell you that they've all been in the administrative area. People say, why don't you cut programs? When you're cutting people, you're cutting programs because you're not able to compete as much because you need to have support. So I'm going to stop there.
As a benchmark, your budget, sort of a request, but your budget against Stony Brook?
Stony Brook's budget, my budget right now, a year ago was a little over, we're right at $14 million. It's now at $13 million, soon to drop less than $13 million. Stony Brook's about $25 million. Buffalo is almost $30 million. And Bloomington, who at one point was listed below us, is also ahead of us, and they have fewer students. So George asked me daily, how the hell are they able to do that? And my answer is, I don't know.
You're doing a lot more of it.
Oh, that's an understatement. Yes.
Probably with a long time to give an answer, but any idea? You had the chart about the ratio of state support versus
yes.
your total budget. Any idea what their state budget picture looks like? Are they getting most of their income outside state support?
Yeah. Stony Brook gets a lot of their athletic support through the foundation, as does Buffalo. And I know that, and George knows this better than I, when Shirley was president at Stony Brook, she said she wanted a Division I program, and she was willing to pay for it. So a majority of their operating budget, and when I say a majority, more than half of it came to the foundation.
So George, basically, is they have richer foundations.
Yeah, they have richer foundations.
And endowments.
First of all, the state portion of Lee's budget is $4.7 million.
Right.
So you got to be careful in terms of the numbers that are there, because what Lee is talking about is all scholarship money, all other monies and revenues that basically are added to it. But the state portion of Lee's budget is $4.7 million. I would assume that the state portions of the other three institutions are proportionate, not equal, because I've got to believe that Stony Brook probably does better. But it is $4.7 million is what the
and
state
98% of that 4.7 is personnel. None of that goes in the scholarship. None of that goes in the operation. Mm-hmm. So, and again, that when people look at the number and they see 13 or 14 million, a lot of faculty people think that it's all state dollars, or predominantly state dollars.
The biggest
30%.
Biggest component of that is student athletic fees. The idea behind going state Division I here, when we did it in 1999, when we were bringing up this program, when I was actually sitting in this chair, when we were doing it, was the idea that we would be able to do it without having a material impact, financial impact, on the campus, and without in any way reducing the academic standards of any of our programs. So that we could bring in Division I athletics. Those were the two criteria when we did this originally, was to minimize the cost and to make sure that the academic standards that applied to our students at large were applied to our athletic community as well, and that we did what we had to do to retain the graduation rates and all of, and we do have student athletes at this university. They are not athletes, they're students, and then they happen to be athletes. At the end of the year.
The numbers are very great.
I mean, yeah, the
numbers are fabulous. And we run a very good, very clean program. It is it's a wonderful program. At the end of the day, Lee is getting cut because, frankly, everybody gets cut. You know, and I know that he, it's a fact of life. You know, and it may not be over. Lee and I have had this conversation. You know, and again, I'm an athletic supporter. But I'm also, be careful with that. But I'm also a university supporter. So it's
a charge for athletic supporter.
All right.
Thanks, Dan.
Dan, just real quick, I just want to just say congratulations to Lee and to Bill, who just walked out on just on behalf of the game that they had at the Garden a few weeks ago. I was able to go down as a couple other people around the table, and it was a great event. It was a lot of fun, and notwithstanding the result on the court, I know the kids had a great time being out there, being able to play in the America Stadium. What? So, and I think I heard rumors that you might be able to, through your creative abilities, to be able to get that to be there for next year. So
yeah, we're working on that now because Bill touched on it briefly, but Lee Cervello and Bill and their group did a fantastic job. We sold 900 tickets. We were originally allotted 500. Wow. Sold 900. We probably could have sold another 500 or so. So it was a great event, except, you're right, for the performance on the court. But the alumni were tremendous. I'm still getting emails from them. It was a lot of fun. Boston University had very few people there, and they were one of the people that really pushed the event and the project. So it says a lot about our alumni. It says a lot about the enthusiasm. So.
Right. But hopefully with a year, if we can knock it in on a year's planning to be able to make it better and be able to do a little bit more,
I
think that we can.
We just found out about it. George and I just found out about it in late December, so
it was awesome.
We didn't have a lot of time.
You guys did a great job, so congratulations.
Incidentally, I was starting that rumor because it was one of the best events I ever had in your city. So that I'm
starting the rumor. And the next morning, Vardeen and I had a very, very profitable breakfast. Yeah. We came home with a chunk of cash.
Yeah. For me.
Actually, maybe more than a chunk of cash, a big chunk of cash, which is good.
Legal tender?
Legal tender so far. Good. It looks like the thing won't bounce.
Next up, George, was the news, or the clarification, I guess, of the city trustee policy on major campus plans.
The materials are in your, it's in your folder. I'll give you an opportunity to go through it. Primarily, this arose out of the issue that came up with the closing of the Southampton campus by Stony Brook. As you know, Stony Brook had an opportunity, which I wish I had, frankly, I'll be honest with you, to close a campus and save $6.5 million at the Southampton. It was mostly real estate because it was a situation where they were able to absorb the faculty and the students back on their main campus. There was an objection. It went to court. The Stony Brook lost in court, primarily on a procedural issue that, as a major decision, it was not vetted appropriately through the council. So this is a copy of the resolution passed by the SUNY Board of Trustees. It actually, as a long-time member of this council, I think it's about time there was an acknowledgement of the authority of the council on major decisions. Go through it. I think we will, whatever is necessary for us to implement this, whether it's coming up with a procedure or a policy guideline, we will do. And rest assured, we will honor the intent of this SUNY Board of Trustees resolution. Is that
That is fair. I mean, I think people should take a look at it. Clearly, you know, what happened at Stony Brook has sparked some, you know, bigger concerns, and you want to make sure that on a going forward basis, to the extent you know, there are major plans that need to be brought before the council for our ability to make recommendations, as I understand it, George, to review and make recommendations is the terminology. I think we maybe all need, we'll have some questions about what that exactly entails. You know, and as always, you know, I think it's incumbent on everybody to be, to a certain degree, activists, but also have an appreciation for what's going on here on campus. So, why don't we bring this up at the May 6th meeting? And I think, George, I know that in speaking to John Riley and others, clearly we're going to make sure that as things happen on campus going forward, we're clearly in a position to be in accordance with the education.
Yeah, and I think one other thing is we actually, as a result of all of these budget issues, we may actually have to communicate with you in between meetings on, for example, the final implementation of the Bag 3 circumstances, because that would be considered a major decision under the guidelines. So which Sue doesn't know about.
Right.
Yet, but
you know, and that poses its own challenges with open meetings laws and, you know, everything else, too.
Well, it's a personnel item, so I believe we can do that in executive session.
Okay. I just meant having a quorum.
Yeah, you know, no, a quorum is another issue. That's it.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, before we started, we talked a little bit about there's a resolution in here on rational tuition increases. You know, George just spoke at length about that, but I think some background for that may be helpful. Pierre, in his role at ACT, can just speak to, you know, recently what's been undertaken and some of the recommendations that have been asked by the SUNY Chancellor to make for the councils to pass and make.
Thank you. Yeah, I think we circulated earlier the Chancellor's testimony, the testimony of Julie Bondar from the Student Assembly, who also sits on the SUNY board, and her representing the students of SUNY.
Also a UAlbany student.
UAlbany student.
Regarding what's referred
to as the rational tuition. As part of the ACT organization, we have reconstituted the board of directors, which is a representative from each campus sitting in on calls, and then responsible for going back to their councils and explaining what the association is doing. As a matter of fact, we're the ACT is the one that flagged the resolution on Southampton and the councils to be circulated around to all the council chairs because of the attendance at the SUNY Board of Trustees meeting. We had a director's call on Monday. We're more closely aligned with the university, the SUNY University Relations Department, i.e. government relations at SUNY, and where the Chancellor, as many of you were in attendance following her State of the University address, attended the ACT luncheon following that, and we've had a close communication with the Chancellor and with the University Relations Office. It was at their request, and quite frankly, ACT's Board of Directors volunteering to support the Chancellor's initiatives, particularly on rational tuition. We couldn't figure out what maintenance of effort definition was either, so, and Nicholas brought that up during our brief discussion over the last couple of days on the resolution. We feel that it's pretty much covered in the sixth paragraph of the resolution, which says that it will be fair, equitable, and responsible, and will be, and the revenue will stay with, in effect, the SUNY campuses. So we think that that covers a concern, and I think that's what George was referring at. There's no percentage, there's no numbers, there's no what it will be. It's just the whole policy and resolution. And we, I know that the board of directors are going to their individual campuses. Fredonia passed this or something similar to this last night, or yesterday, Wednesday, at their meeting. And we would offer it here. There may be a procedural thing to bring it to the table, Dan, or whatever. I would ask that the council consider this.
I think typically the education law would require, you know, you get more advance notice before we ask you to act on a resolution, but just given the process and when this came up, given the fact that the budget at least constitutionally is required to be done by April 1st and our next meeting is until May 6th, and given the fact that we're all asked to be advocates on behalf of the university, and I think George made a fairly compelling case earlier as well, you know, I would ask that this motion be considered and adopted. The essence of it, as Pierre laid out, is asking for a rational tuition plan. It isn't more specific than that really right now. It provides a lot of flexibility. It's just an endorsement of that construct. So I would ask for a motion in support of this resolution.
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
Thank you, Mike, you endorsed it.
I moved.
Rob, you seconded.
I second. That's correct. Thanks.
Is there anybody who feels they should abstain or anything? Okay. Give it an opportunity in case there's.
Okay. Thank you, George.
Thank you.
Is Bob still here? Thank you, Bob.
Thanks, Dan. Quickly, in your packet, I think we included some updated enrollment activities that are part of the Alumni Association Undergraduate Admissions Partnership. And I want to thank Pardeen and Lee and Bill and all the alumni for the support that they're giving us. As background, 3 years ago, we started a program with Ryan Woods in Westchester. Last year, with Pardeen, assistants. We grew it to three. Now we're up to six. And these are events that are really put together by the Alumni Association. And we invite admitted students to join us, perhaps faculty members, students, et cetera, and your alumni, and to help try to spread the good news about the university. You'll notice I'm inviting any and all of you, if any of these activities are in your local area, let me know. I'll be happy to put you on the list, provide you with directions, et cetera. I've also included, we'll begin contacting by phone. We have a program in March where we will also call admitted students. We have faculty involvement. We have alumni involvement. And if any of the council members would like to call in students from the local high school in their area or in the local region, shoot me an email. I've included it here. We appreciate any help. One of the pieces that you have to remember when you talk about that decrease in the population in the Northeast, the competition for any student at a public or private institution in this region is just unbelievable. So any help we can get from you, we greatly appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Bob?
I have a quick suggestion, comment, apropos of that. I'll confess, I'm a little bit of a traitor because I recruit for my alma mater, which is not UAlbany. And my alma mater happens to be in Ohio. But I recruit here in New York, in upstate New York. I go to these fairs and they send me brochures and I talk it up, right? Apropos of getting more students from out of state, if we can network beyond Connecticut and New Jersey and Massachusetts, say to the Midwest, through our alumni who do this voluntarily, we don't have to pay them, we might increase those numbers.
Sure. That's a good point.
It's a very good point.
I also would add that we have a dozen alumni covering college fairs outside the region for us. We also have part of Bardeen and Lee's help. We have an alumni who are representing us at various college events, but I agree with you. Thank you.
Okay. Bardeen?
Just a couple of points since I didn't want to show a video, but since Sue showed a video, I'm compelled to show the video that we have. And you all know, one of the issues we have on this campus, and you talk to many people, is about the culture of philanthropy. And we always talk, and actually Lisa Ravello always told me, we are the only institution, only business that we wait for our customers to leave, then try to attract them. So we want to teach philanthropy while they're in school here, our students. So when you started UAlbany Unite program, that means we went at the University of Albany Foundation with the help of the Alumni Association. We are providing a $10,000 reward or award to a group, to a student club that does the best video and raise the most money through their video, and they go on this UAlbany site and they themselves make the video, and of course we edit it if there's any content that we don't want to do, because it could be quite profitable. It was up to them, and it goes all over the place, and the video that raises the most money will get the most amount of dollar matched. And you want to do the honors?
Could your student group use more funding?
The UAlbany Fund is proud to announce UAlbany Unite,
a student group video challenge.
UAlbany Unite is a project designed to get the word out about the great things that our student groups are doing,
and to generate donations for these groups through the UAlbany Fund. If you are a recognized student organization, participating is easy.
Step one, create a short video promoting your student group and explaining how support from UAlbany Fund donors could help you achieve your goals.
Step two, upload your group's video to our website, www.albany.edu/unite.
Step 3, encourage your group members, friends, roommates, parents, everyone you know, to log on to www.albany.edu/unite to view your group's video and make a donation in support of your group.
Step 4, every group that submits a video will keep the donations that they receive. At the end of the spring semester, we will also award bonus prize money to groups with the best videos.
To find out if your group is eligible, and for more details on how to participate, visit our website, www.albany.edu/unite.
I'm gonna show you one of the videos that one of the
all these students, you all make up a fun and inviting group of Jewish students. We provide free kosher Friday night dinners every other week. Along with dinner, we provide our members with fun events, usually at a subsidized rate or free. With growing costs and an increase of members, our budget has remained the same. Still, we have tried our best this year to maintain these free and cheap activities for the good of our beloved Hillel. With your help, we can maintain our programming, maybe even allow for an increased number of events. This way, the UA Hillel spirit can live on with strength, and our students can have even more fun on campus.
We have about 11 of them so far, and more to come.
When's it close, the applications?
I think we have 2 more weeks. We were going to end it this week, but there were a couple of other groups came and they said they wanted to submit their videos. And next week they have off, so we're giving them additional week.
You're going to give a gold Minerva at the end?
Or yeah, what something do people like get? That. They get their
in this case, a gold menorah, but we're going to.
Yeah, and just a couple of updates from the foundation. Our last year, our investment return was 13.5%. And if you remember last year, this time I didn't give this report because we had lost 19%. And overall, our endowment was up in between contributions and investment returns 19.2%. And this brings the total endowment to $29.5 million. There's still a ways to go to catch up with the big boys or even blue boys. And but today, since June 3rd, December 31st, we're just over $34 million. December 31st, the first half of our fiscal year, we're up just north of $34 million. We closed
up to $34 million.
The endowment.
The endowment went from over $34
million. Over $34 million. We had a couple of large gifts in the first half. A $1.5 million trust was set up for the University of Albany, and Sorrell could give you the detail, not that he had anything to do with the gift, but he could give you the detail.
And, oh, it's a challenge, Sorrell.
Not in those minutes.
And so, Coca-Cola, $210,000, and Dr. Violet Larney, $200,000, Alan Stephenson, $200,000, Stacey Pasquale from Goldman Sachs, $150,000. This is an additional to another $100,000 she made. And Jim McGovern family, $100,000. We have three other six-figure gifts that we haven't signed the MOU yet, but I'm pretty sure we're going to do it over the next few weeks.
What about distributions out of the endowment?
Last year, as far as scholarships, we awarded over $600,000 and $2.9 million we provided for programming support.
Okay.
So that's what...
That McGovern, the McGovern Scholarship is a really interesting thing. That's in honor of one of our alums that perished in 9/11. And a couple of his buddies and his wife have been started this program where they have a golf tournament on Long Island and they contribute to the university.
It's over $670,000 to date.
Which is wonderful. And they just keep it up and they're wonderful people. And they only appear at the Big Purple Growl.
Right, they come every year.
Once a year they appear at the Big Purple Growl and we get a chance to acknowledge them.
That's wonderful. Yeah. Before we adjourn, I know President Clinton's coming. You mentioned any other highlights of commencement? Well, things that aren't
well, you know, commencement guys, you guys are always, you know, important players.
What's the date on commencement? Yeah.
Commencement is May 14th.
14th, 15th, it says.
Yeah, 14th, 15th. 25th anniversary of School of Public Health. It's good. Yeah.
Yeah, they told me about that. I don't know the day.
Well, but we're here, what, May 6th?
No, May 7th is the public school public health gala.
Something that's not listed here that I have an interest in, and happens to conflict with the chamber dinner, but the Writers Institute is having Maureen Dowd. If anybody reads Maureen Dowd, you know, she'll be here.
I've seen her before actually speak.
Yeah, she'll be here live. What's the date?
March 11th. Or
it's the same. It's the same as the chamber dinner, whatever
the
heck it is. Because I got to do
it's
both.
The same week as Clinton?
No.
Following week. It's the following week.
Clinton's March.
But if you're interested, the Writers Institute is having Maureen Dowd. It depends on your politics, but I like it.
March 10th?
Yeah. Yeah, March 10th.
Thank you, George. Thanks, everybody.
And then, March 3rd, all of you, you're going to be in New York City at the Hearst Tower.
Oh, yeah, you're invited. That's important.
You're all invited to attend and strongly encourage all to come. And people who want to come from here, we have a bus that will be going to New York City because we also have our foundation's board meeting. Lee, do you want to add to your event?
Yeah, there's a panel discussion. We have alumni who work in the entertainment industry doing a discussion just to give a little bit more than just the cheese and crackers. We go bring a little bit more value to the reception that evening. We have a producer from American Idol, an actor from Army Wives, and a number of other alums working in the entertainment industry who are going to talk about how that's fun and exciting, and hopefully that'll draw another big crowd and that'll lead to future dollars for us. It sounds like we need that.
Yeah.
Peter Bogdanovich.
Oh, yeah, and Peter Bogdanovich is going to...
I'm looking around to see how many people recognize Peter Bogdanovich.
Yeah, that's like really
Peter
cool.
Peter Bogdanovich is going to be here April 10th. Is that a Friday? That Friday.
He's really good.
Or whatever it is.
You'll love
him. Foundation
is he going to do clips and everything?
Excuse me?
Is he going to do the clips and everything like he does sometimes?
Yeah, this is actually, we have
it's like a seminar
at
does.
5 o'clock at local, place here, and at 7 o'clock, he has lent this auditorium, he does that whole...
Yeah, that's right. He's so really great.
April 8th is a Friday.
April 8th. And it's at 7 o'clock.
Well, that'd be fun.
But the reception is at 5 at downtown.
Okay. Great. Any other points?
I just had one other point, and maybe this is a good time, is that we talked about having a closer relationship between the council and the foundation board. And I think at one particular time last year, we were almost going to jointly meet. And this March 3rd may be a good opportunity, but I would also encourage us to consider having the foundation board members, representatives, et cetera, join us for one meeting, or we, they, in some fashion, because we're all doing the same work. So.
Okay, point well taken.
The foundation is, we found out legally, cannot be the kind of advocates that we had hoped they could be because of the not-for-profit law. So we have to be careful in terms of how we use the foundation going forward. Mm. I didn't know that.
Everything but advocacy.
Really? And the foundation can use the council.
Given
that
40% of what our money comes from the state, so the foundation has to be active in 84.
I'm hearing it too, but the lawyers are telling me different.
Okay, thank you. Can I get a motion for adjournment?
So moved.
Great meeting.
Second. All in favor?
All right.
Thank you, everybody.
This was a great meeting.
Near
was
more than that.
This was the second we ever had.